I'm Catherine Bosch, and I work as a family and life educator for a counseling service in Kitchener, Ontario. Some of my previous lives have been lived in Minnesota and New York and Massachusetts, and now we're in Ontario. Looks like we can't manage to survive without snow. So we keep up in the northern section. I was thinking that I should make a quick trip over to Lodge 6 in the shop and ask to borrow a toolkit of tools. Because when I think of building relationships, I think of putting things together and the hammer and the saw and the nails and the wood and all that. I didn't get a chance to get over there, however. So we're going to have to use that image in our own mind of how do we build relationships. What's important in the relationship, whether it's a relationship with a friend, with your partner, with your spouse, with your child of whatever age, from infant to adult, with those that we come in contact. How do we build relationships? What are some of the basics? But let's just take a minute or two as people are still gathering. What are some of the things you think are important as you work toward building a relationship? What's important for you? What's worked? Yes?
Sharing feelings.
Okay, there's sharing of feelings. What else?
Trust.
Trust. Okay.
Love.
Okay, there's love.
Being honest.
Being honest.
Refined interests.
Interests. Oh, you're making it very easy for me. What was the other one that I missed? Interest and what somebody
Respect.
Else?
Respect.
Respect.
Time together.
Time. It's hard to build a relationship if you don't have time together, isn't it?
Understanding.
Understanding.
Really liking people.
Really liking people. Okay. As versus pretending or people are no damn good kind of feeling. You've seen these signs that have that kind of statement on it. Really like. Okay, can I even add one to that? That liking people also include yourself. Any others? What else is important? What are some other important tools, so to speak, or materials for building relationships?
Listening.
Okay. Sharing things. We've got sharing things, but we don't have listening, though.
I don't know how you say it in one word, but not turning the other person off or doing offensive things.
Okay.
I don't know how to say
Anyone think of a one-word description for that?
Acceptance. That's the other side.
Acceptance is another part. We might put that down, but let's still work on that other word.
Consideration.
Consideration.
Consideration? Toward
maybe.
Include some of it. Let's put that down. Maybe we'll have to use a couple words.
Okay.
Sensitivity, maybe.
So we may have consideration, acceptance, consideration, sensitivity. Anything else?
Tolerance.
Tolerance. We're getting a lot of
courtesy. How about a sense of humor?
Okay, sense of humor.
Flexibility.
Flexibility.
Courtesy.
Courtesy. Taken a lot of words, but we still haven't quite got it. And maybe we just have to put down, not turn other off. Okay. How do we know? That works different ways for different people, doesn't it? We started out here trying to find something succinct for your statement. got a lot of other marvelous qualities in there. A couple places up here, that's an empty one up here too. Okay, there's quite a bit of raw materials available, things that we need to recognize, be aware of, concerned about, as we work together to build relationships, at whatever level that may be. Let's talk about some of these a little bit more and see how do we put them together in a way that can help build a relationship. I think often that we can think of a variety of types of relationship, whether it's a relationship with a friend, a coworker, a child, our own child, our intimate partner, and they all are built at a different level. They may have a variety of these same characteristics, these same qualities, but taken to a different level. So I think we'll start with some very basics. And one word that I want to be able to deal with also that we don't have down here, a couple of them, also include equality and expectations. And we might even begin with expectations first. What do you expect of the relationship? And are we aware and can we verbally communicate some of our expectations? This is especially important as we deal with our partners. We sometimes find it a little bit easier, or we have some fewer expectations about a friendship. Friendship, meeting some mutual interests, some mutual needs, sharing of time, having a diversion from whatever else you're doing. Expectations with our partners go on beyond that. Expectations on how each other acts, maybe that's in the earlier one too. Expectations of how each one will meet your needs. And sometimes we play a great guessing game on this. You try to guess what I need. And if you happen to catch on it, maybe I'll tell you. And if not, I'll just hold it against you. And wait until you possibly can come up with it. You know of people who play those kinds of games? I think we probably all do it sometime, whether we want to admit it or not. What are our expectations? In my work, I also do programs for couples who are going to be married, marriage preparation. Sometimes I've had to change that to partner preparation because not all young people may decide on that marriage ceremony at the time that they decide to partner. But what are the expectations that they have of each other? And they often will respond with a kind of blank face, and so I'll have the men go off in one section and the women go off in another section and give them each a big newsprint and ask them to write down the expectations they have to share with each of their same gender, the expectations that they have of their partners. And it's been interesting to see the different groups that I've had, and sometimes the men just cannot get started on expectations. What do you mean by this? Give us a hint. Give us an idea. But there have been other times where the women haven't been able to get started. And they'll just stand there, sit there and try to think. Now, I think all being very careful that they say the right word. And the men will just start listing it down. Or when they finally do spend 10, 15 minutes of just brainstorming, how different the lists of expectations are. One, picking up after oneself. I mean, one group I had, the whole idea that that I expect my partner to love me, to be responsive to me, didn't even appear on their list. Nowhere. And then when they saw this was number one and number two on their partners list, they thought, oh, that's what you mean by expectations. One of them said, not fooling around with anyone else, don't flirt with anyone else, you know, these kinds of things. They didn't think at all of this sharing of love, care, and concern. Love didn't appear at all on their list. Well, what are your expectations? And if this is something that you have not been able to share with a partner at whatever level, friendship level or your spouse level, how do you begin? And it's okay to begin somewhere, even if you've been married 30 years or more, to say, well, we've still got some new things to discover about each other. And you can do it in a variety of ways. Do some sentence completion. What I really like. What some expectations I have, and list them. Maybe it's easier to write them down, and then to share the notes with each other. Not to argue, or how come you have that one down? I do that all the time. But, oh, okay. I guess maybe I think I'm doing this, but I must not be doing it in the way that you receive it in the same way. What are the next step then? What are some specifics? That you show love for me. Okay. Next sentence completion might be, I feel you show love to me when you do what? What are some of the particular ways? The specifics, so to speak, that you might use. What's helpful? Share these. And it's really very interesting how sometimes it's the most difficult to share these kinds of inner thoughts and expectations with those the closest to you. And you might be able to talk about it freely with someone else. It's a fear, perhaps. If I do say this, will they still accept me? Will they think I'm talking down to them? Will I think I don't appreciate what they do? Rather than give them some additional options for what else might be another way of responding.
Will they be turned off?
Will they be turned off? Will they not love me anymore? That's really scary. So, what are your expectations? For those who are looking forward to partnering, when you meet someone new, are you expecting to be swept off your feet? Or is it okay to let the relationship grow, take time to grow, that you become friends first? I was listening to a tape by Lowell and Carol Erdahl on intimacy in marriage, and Lowell makes a comment on, he usually tells couples that he deals with that it's important to marry someone you want to go to bed with, and also that you want to wake up with in the morning. And that may be two different things. You have different expectations for each one. Get in touch with those expectations, because there's a lot more waking hours than there are sleeping hours. You have to have a lot more interaction. I did a lot of work with a professor by the name of Saul Gordon when we were at Syracuse University in Syracuse, New York. And I remember a statement that he would generally tell students in our marriage and family living classes when he would give them his regular speech each term. And that was, before you decide to marry anyone, you should spend at least 24 hours with them without any sex, without television, and without anyone else around. Can you survive 24 hours? In other words, talking to each other, sharing with each other, that doesn't include sex or television or diversion by other people. That might be rather scary for some of us who even are married. Also, as we talk about expectations, to perhaps expect that it's not always going to be rising to the pinnacle and continuing on up higher and higher, that relationships can have ups and downs, and that's okay. Another counselor at our agency and I were interviewed a couple of weeks ago for an article in our local paper on romance. Been some new books out on romance, people talking about romance. A lot of the Harlequin novels all about romance and all these, wow, kinds of descriptions that they give to romance and what's romance really all about. And that may be part of our expectations too. And to recognize that you know, there's no human being that can survive on highs all the time. I mean, the drug culture tries to. That there'll also be some lows, and that may help you to appreciate the highs when they do come. Romance is not, as someone said, I always thought romance was going to be like the Big Ben in London, booming away, it's time to this marvelous deep tones, and then I realize it's really like the Dingle Man going down the street. I mean, that there's some niceness to it, but it's not that there will be some of the Big Ben Tower of London chimes, but there will also be some very quiet times too that are important as well. Our expectations in relationships also include that we have to always agree. There can be no differences of opinion. I'm not sure we'd ever find any partners if that were the expectation, that we have to always agree, whether it's partners or with friends. My husband and I have some very dear friends that two other couples. We started to relate to ourselves as the people in Four Seasons until it got a little bit too close for comfort. And one gentleman who is an insurance agent decided to go off and leave his wife. How many of you know the movie, The Four Seasons? Well, he did go off, and the female and the other couple, the third couple, went up to see them when she realized that this marriage of 30 years was breaking down. And the fellow said to her, well, if I do start going with someone, will you still invite me to your gatherings? And she said, but we'll never go on a cruise together. I refuse to go off swimming in the nude. It has a happy ending in that the couple is now back together again, and we spent some time with him recently. And I also was aware that through this friendship of 25 years, in fact, we decided that we would all celebrate our 25th anniversary of knowing each other as friends this fall at a gathering at one couple's time-sharing place, that we have a lot of differences. But there's a lot of sameness, too. There's a lot of comfort in knowing that we can disagree on some things. And that one couple started out very much Republicans, and some of us were very strongly Democrats. And I guess maybe we made an influence in that he's not so sure that he's a Republican any longer. But anyway, that we can have some differences and still appreciate each other for perhaps some of those differences as well as for the sameness that we share. Our expectations. What are our expectations? And can we stop to verbalize them with each other? Scary, yes, but maybe worthwhile as well, too. And maybe in dealing with those differences, it can show that we care enough to deal with differences, care enough to accept you even with differences. That the opposite of love is not hate. It's really apathy. Don't care. Do we care enough to really deal with the differences and or accept the other person even with differences? What about our expectations of role in whatever the relationship is? What role do I play? What role do you expect me to play? What role do I expect you to play? What role are you comfortable in playing? And maybe some of us in this room would say, gee, it was so much easier 20, 30 years ago when roles were nicely set out. You know what you were to do. A little bit earlier today, a couple of us were talking about roles of clergy wives and how this can stifle one's creativity and one's own life or whatever. and that maybe there are a variety of roles that one plays. And sometimes you're eager to go on to another role, but you still have some pulls toward what you think people expect of you. And so to look at roles, and I do think, I have some real concerns, however, I do think that those who are coming into partnership roles in their 20s and 30s now may have an easier time than those of us who are in our 40s and 50s and beyond. But I'm really concerned about those who are in their teens. I almost thought this morning that I would like to propose on our schedule for next week a meeting with all the parents of minors. I was just did a session for the minors this morning, and I was telling them some of the things that I usually teach in my parenting courses to give them an idea of where I come from. And I had the feeling that they would like their parents to have some of these same ideas. And I think we may be at some differences there. But roles. And I was really quite surprised at where some of these teens were in their expectations. And I think they're back to where some of us were 30, 40 years ago. And that's scary for a number of us who have really worked to help provide opportunities, broader opportunities for women, to feel that the younger generation may not want these, or don't think that they're important because they haven't experienced the oppression of the other side. Well, role leads to another category that we really don't have on here that I think is important, and that's the role of equality. That's the characteristic or the material or the tool of equality, whatever we want to say, call it, for building relationships. When we lived in Syracuse, New York, Saul Gordon, who was one of our professors, lived right across the street from us. And he's written a lot of books and done a lot of workshops in helping parents deal with issues of sexuality and helping teens deal with understanding themselves, accepting themselves. His latest, I think he's got a video out on how can I tell if I'm in love. He's got another one out on teen depression relating to these issues of the increase in teen suicides, the feelings about themselves, the self-esteem for teens. Anyway, he wrote a book that's called You a number of years ago, and he gave a copy of it to our older daughter when she graduated from high school. And it was just new at that time, so I read through it. And one of the things that caught my eye in it was a statement in Building Relationships that said, don't plan to marry anyone who doesn't respect your intelligence. And then in parentheses, he says, and don't plan to get married or make these decisions until you can respect your own intelligence. And I think those two are very important together. In a sense, you respecting yourself and feel that you have some respect from the other and that you can offer respect to the other. Those are very important. Equality. It's very difficult to expect intimacy from a master-slave relationship. Now, a lot of us may have bought into that, and that we may not have wanted to call it that, but we thought that was the role that we had to enter in. The male was the master and the female was a slave. We certainly didn't want to use those terms, but I think we probably acted as if they were the labels anyway, until we may have decided that that was not the best material for growth for either one of us to be in a master or slave relationship. That we need to accept each other as equal, that we each have our gifts to offer to the other. Because we really can't have equality or true intimacy if we fear the other person. And when we think of relationships and power within relationships, I think it's important to also recognize that the person who has the most power in the relationship is the person who has the least invested in it. It's the person who can say, well, if you don't do it the way I want to, I'll just go and leave. The relationship doesn't matter to me anyway. And that's certainly a way to manipulate the other person, and that doesn't help promote positive relationships. To always feel that you have to manipulate or that you are constantly being manipulated. So equality is certainly important. Equality for acceptance, the absence of fear, being able to trust the other person. We'll come back to trust a little bit more. And perhaps an important basis of equality deals with the whole issue of decision making. How do you make decisions? In my marriage preparation courses, I have a whole list of basic tasks that need to be enacted in a partner relationship, from carrying out the garbage to deciding what kind of car you buy and all those things in between. And there's a column for the female partner, for the male partner, or both. And it's interesting to walk around and talk with the couple as they do this particular exercise and to realize how traditional some of them can be. The garbage and the lawn and the car maintenance and are all the males. The groceries, the meals, the dishes. And these are generally two career families. I mean, both are involved in working. Both may have college degrees, or they're both working at whatever level. Both working same amount of hours. Sometimes if women are bringing in more income than the males, the male may be a student, the female may be the breadwinner. But they'll still go down the traditional roles, and the women will have 3/4 of the checks in their column. The men may have 1/4. And then to see some where they've checked all the way down the both column, and the difference in how they interact within the whole group. And I'll generally find the ones where the 3/4 are on the female column are generally the young women who are constantly leaning on the boyfriend or the fiancé, constantly clinging around them, and feel that if there's some part of discussion that each one's to take, she'll look to him and he'll answer for her. As if I don't have the wisdom, the right, the ability, the knowledge, the sense, the whatever, to say anything worthwhile, that it all comes out of my master. And I really fear for some of these relationships how it's going to be in another 10 years, and hope for the best. So in this decision making, how do we respect each other's contributions? And I think that gets us into the whole area of decision making, where you can deal with the needs, the particular issue at hand. What are your needs? What are your feelings about the particular issue? And to get that out as a basic, that's step one. Step two is to brainstorm all possibilities. I was doing this with the miners this morning, and we'd get out a number of ideas, and then somebody would start shooting them down. You can't do this, that wouldn't be. I'd knock them out the window. I'd do this. I'd say, wait a minute, let's just get the ideas down. We can evaluate them in the next step. Let's just put out all the possibilities that how one could react in this situation, or interact, or act upon their feelings, or the behavior, to put into behavior their feelings. And then to go, when that's all done, from the ridiculous to the sublime, and sometimes that gives a little bit of humor to the situation, and you can laugh and you can relax a little bit and be a little bit less stressed. After you've got some options down, some alternatives, to go back through them and evaluate them. I don't feel comfortable with this one. This one I can't accept. I think this would be too damaging, or this is too hurtful, or whatever. And cross out the ones you can't accept, and that hopefully there are some others. If there aren't, go back to brainstorming some more. Or look to see how you might revise the ones you've crossed out that could be, to help them to be acceptable to you. Then to choose which one you're going to act on, or which several you'll act on. And often we stop with that step, and we forget the most important, and that's the deciding who is going to do what, when, where, and how. Okay, you do this, and I'll do that by, you know, these are going to be, I'll take this as a responsibility. If we don't do that kind of assignment, the whole problem solving may be an experience, but it may not really resolve the problem, because it may not really fully get put into action. And then to decide, okay, how long are we going to try this? Let's see if this will work for the next day, week, hour, month, and come back to a time and say, well, how do you feel about this? How is it working? And then revise if you have to. Go back through the certain steps that are necessary if it is not working out. So the whole issue about decision making is not who's right, but what is right. What's going to be the most helpful thing for this relationship? How can we work together so that both of us can win? It's not an idea that you're going to win and I'm going to lose, and boy, am I going to resent you. Or I'll act it out, I'll just get even with you in some other way. You know, this dirty dealing underneath. Or that I'm going to win, and boy, that shows how much better I am than you are. And it's okay, you can be a wimp if you want to and cry over losing, but, you know, I can show my macho image or whatever. But what we really want to work toward is a win-win. Because if you're going to resent the issue, you're not going to want to carry it out. You're not going to respect the other person very much either, feel very good about it, if it's a power issue. Now, there are some people who still feel that for a relationship to exist, there has to be one in control. And I hope we can agree to disagree on that, because I certainly would. I don't think it's helpful for one person to constantly carry the weight of the relationship. It becomes a burden. I remember we have some good young clergy friends, and one young fellow is in a very difficult, moved from a difficult situation as an assistant pastor, where the senior pastor really didn't want to have to share, I mean, always redid or didn't trust anything anyone else did. So after several years in that situation, the pastor moved to another congregation and didn't really know all the problems that that congregation has. It's a congregation that probably shouldn't have ever been formed because it's overpopulated. I mean, there's not enough people in the area to help it to grow to the point that it needs to grow. So he's been having some difficult times, and he's considering some other options. He has a master's in social work. He's thinking of going into a chaplaincy field, something like this. But they have three adopted children, one in school and two that they just adopted several years ago who are not in school yet. One will be in kindergarten. So they're sort of waiting for the children to get into school so mom can go back to earn some money, because she also has her MSW. And I remember her, and he was saying, you know, I can wait. That's okay. I can manage this. And she was saying, but I can imagine how furious you must feel, wanting to get on to do something that would be more interesting, less frustrating, less stressful, and you can't do it because you've got the rest of us to care for. And I just want you to know how I feel, that I understand, and that I recognize the strain that this puts on you and the extra burden it puts on you, that you want to do something and you don't feel you have the right to do it. And he said, oh, well, thank you. You know, that is how I feel. And I can manage it. I can manage the next 2 years much better now. That's helpful to share some of those ideas. It came up quite by accident in a conversation. So we want to look in decision-making, sharing our needs, sharing our feelings, looking at alternatives, looking at possibilities, that there are always possibilities. And to recognize that not to decide is to decide, that even if we put off a decision, we've made a decision. Not to do anything about it is the decision we've made. The last thing in equality that I want to bring up is the role of what we may call the helping husband, the helping partner. You know, you're both working, you're both putting in time outside the home, whether it's in volunteer service or paid for work service. And then the husband comes home and dutifully helps the wife by vacuuming on occasion, or helps by picking up some things. I'm helping my wife. When we both live in the house, we both help dirty the house, we both eat the meals that are prepared in the house and the food that's brought into the house, and then how we can divide these roles, these necessities, more equitably, so that it's not somebody saying, hey, won't you, or it's about time that this rug gets vacuumed, etc., so that there's always one giving out orders and the other one's always feeling like they're taking orders, that there can be some initiation of taking responsibilities in the nitty-gritty of the relationship, the nuts and bolts of the house cleaning part of the relationship as well. And then I'd like to go into some of the things that we put on the board, especially the listening and sharing of feelings, which I think is an important set of materials, tools to use for building relationships. How does a relationship grow if you really don't share things with each other, which is the kind of nurturing, the rain that helps the plant to grow, the nutrition that comes from the soil? To be able to grow in a sterile mixture, they say some of the plant soils that are being sold now are really not conducive to plant growth, and if you have plants that don't seem to be doing very much at all after you've just transplanted them, you may have chosen the type of soil that just doesn't have anything to feed them. It's just black, and it holds roots under out of sight, but it doesn't have anything to feed them. Sometimes our relationships are like that. We're there, but we may not really be feeding the roots of each other, for the nurturing and growth of each other, because we have too many things keeping us busy, running off here and there, taking care of everyone else in the community, and that may be an indictment against some clergy sometimes, that they spend so much time out taking care of others that no one's around to take care of their own families. And sometimes their own families need a pastor as well. So we look at communication and how can we help nurture the relationship with communication, which includes both listening and speaking. Listening. I do a lot of the training programs that are put out by Thomas Gordon, Parent Effectiveness Training, Effectiveness Training for Men and Women, Youth Effectiveness Training, Teacher Effectiveness Training, that deal with the whole issue of communication, and they go 24 to 30 hours, and I won't do justice to them at this time, but to say if you have these in your community, take them. Pick up the book and read it together. Do some exercises together on it. Ask someone to initiate this kind of workshop for you to grow together in. But the important things that come through this particular system of communication is to look at who owns the problem. And so often, mom or dad take the whole ownership of the problem. They've got to solve everything for everyone. And you come with some feelings to them, whether it's to your partner or a child comes to you, and they've got something has happened and they've got some feelings that they want to share, and you immediately start to say that that's either not the right feeling or you really don't feel that way, or how could you feel that way? You're so good, you're so attractive, you're so talented, you're so whatever. And you never listen to the feelings, never really acknowledge and accept the fact that those feelings for that person are really right and true, and no matter how much you're going to say that's not true, that's not so, it's just negating the person. They'll say, I'm wrong to feel this way. I don't have a right to my own feelings. They're not right. I don't understand them. You understand them better than I do. To recognize that the feeling a person has is okay for them. Feelings aren't right or wrong. Feelings are. Feelings are not judgeable. It's only when we decide how we're going to put them into action that they become judgeable as positive, negative, helpful or not helpful. But feelings, one of my professors always used to say, when was the last time someone told you to stop worrying? You were worried. And someone told you to stop worrying, and you did. How do you turn off feelings just because somebody says, stop it? And I often see this in grocery stores or supermarkets, a little child crying and an adult very upset, bothered, frustrated, saying, stop crying, stop crying. If you don't stop crying, I'll give you something to really cry about. And then wep. You know, if you're crying, it's awfully difficult to turn them off right away. Because there's some feelings behind there that you that you're dealing with, and to just have somebody say, I can't accept crying, turn them off, doesn't turn off those inside feelings, or you begin to feel a lot of guilt inside. I'm terrible, horrible, very bad, no good thing, because I have these feelings. So to get in touch with one's problem, if it's a problem that strictly is in the other person's ball court, let them keep it there and just listen. Attentive silence may be all that's necessary. Just to look at the person in the eyes. Maybe you nod the head and you just keep listening to them. The next step is what I like to call friendly grunts as a kind of response. There, you can look at them, give them your full attention and say, uh-huh, oh, yeah. Whatever seems appropriate to what they're saying. That you're not negating them, you're not putting them down, you're just saying, uh-huh. Yeah, wow, okay, They at least know that you're tuned in. They don't know whether you've really understood them, but that you're at least not putting them down. It's much better than saying, oh, you shouldn't feel that way. How can you possibly, oh, you're such a good kid. Now, if you'd only do, which Tom Gordon calls roadblocks, they put up a roadblock between you and me, roadblock for the passage of our relationship together. So leave those all aside. They may have their place at other times, but when a person owns a problem, the tool that you need is to listen to them. And with attentive silence or using friendly grunts or door openers. Door openers are the kinds of saying, yeah, you really, if you'd like to talk about it, I'd be willing to listen, to let them know that you're tuning in. You really got something to say. Go ahead, go on. Uh-huh. Do you want to say some more? Gordon goes on further, but what's most helpful in the situation is to use what he calls active listening, other people call reflective listening, or checking out. Use any of the labels that you want to. What it is, in a sense, is checking out if what you think you're hearing is what the other person intends for you to hear by tuning into the feelings and tuning into the facts. You're really quite miserable in having to deal with those things. That's the last thing in the world you want to deal with. Or, boy, I can see you've got some strong feelings on that if you can't quite identify them. That you're really bothered to have to put up with all of this. Or that's frustrating to know that what you've tried to work at doesn't seem to work. And if it's not the right, if that's not what they meant for you to hear, they can then correct it, or they can, if it's okay, confirm it. Verify or clarify it is another set of words. Yeah, that's what I feel. And then they can go on. I'm being accepted. I'm okay, even with these feelings, in spite of these feelings, that you're willing to listen and accept me. And most often, that's all that's needed to help solve the problem. Maybe not all the time, but in a good percentage of the cases, to know that you're still accepted, that you're not put down, there's no roadblocks built up, you can go, yeah, well, I feel a lot better about that. You begin to hear, and you may come to your own decision as to what's okay and what's helpful, what might be the next step for you to do. How many times have you had a problem and somebody said, what you really ought to do about this is, fill in blank, 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 blank. And you say, no, I can't do that because, so they offer another suggestion. No, that won't work because they'll offer another suggestion. No, I just couldn't do that. It doesn't matter whether you offer them the sky. They'll keep saying no, because in a sense, it's that two-year-old feeling down inside that says, please, Mom, I want to do it myself. They may get some ideas from you, but they're going to resist letting you ever know. They may resist letting you ever know, hey, that really worked. They may. But if you listen to them and then say, you know, what are the possibilities that you've thought of, and they throw out some ideas, and you may throw in an idea and such, they may latch on to something you throw, but then they can accept it a little bit easier because they've contributed. It hasn't been, I'm so weak, I'm so without abilities or resources, you've got to fill me up. They can feel that they... back to equality again. The other part of communication, speaking. Sometimes we run off at the mouth and say a lot of nothing. Have you ever been with someone where you've talked and talked and talked and you try to figure out what did you say and you can't remember anything that went on? But I don't think that's as common. Often we just can sit in silence. And silence sometimes is okay too. It has its place. You needn't be uncomfortable with silence. But if you really want to build a relationship, want to develop an intimacy, whether it's among friends or among partners, we need to feel comfortable, accepted, which comes through all the other things that we've just talked about. And many of these characteristics that we have on the board, that it's okay to share the feelings that we have, our thoughts, our ideas, our hopes, our dreams, some of the experiences that we want to share, some of the concerns that we have, good and bad, and to know you'll be accepted. You're okay, even if you have some of these feelings, thoughts, wishes, dreams, hopes, and so forth. When we start to bottle these up inside of us, we lose something of ourselves and we lose something in the relationship by not feeling comfortable enough to share both the good and the bad. Sometimes we feel if we don't have enough good things to share, we shouldn't share the bad. And sometimes sharing the not so good feelings helps us to come up with some good feelings. And yet that's probably one of the more difficult things for intimates to share. I remember a friend long ago who said he didn't think he'd ever get married because after 6 months of being married to someone, what are you going to talk about? Run out of things to talk about, run out of conversation. I think he has been married. He has gotten married since I haven't kept up with him. But I think I would assume he's also realized that maybe the bigger problem is not having enough time, not taking the time to share those thoughts, wishes, dreams, hopes, expectations, ideas, doing some problem solving. We so often live in the world of assumptions. I assume you know. Try to guess. Instead of sharing it. Well, how can we break through some of this impasse when it comes to the communication of sharing? Maybe taking each other seriously, accepting each other's thoughts and feelings as being okay. Minimize roadblocks that we talked about just a little bit ago. The praising that you may not feel as being most comfortable. You feel that's a little bit too much to carry. I like to use the word encouragement or appreciation instead of praise. To me, praise has the label of good boy, good girl. And what does that really mean? But if you can be more specific and describe what you like, describe what you appreciate. I really like it when you. I'm grateful to have you help with, to share your time with me, to whatever. And be free in these. These are the least expensive gifts you can ever give to anyone, and probably the most appreciated gift is a word of encouragement, a word of appreciation. And we are so often so stingy with them. How many of you have read the story of The Warm Fuzzy by Claude Steiner? Find it if you haven't read it. It's in the library. It's a good one because, I won't go into it. It's a good one to help you get in tune with warm fuzzies, the kinds of statements that I feel a little bit better when I hear somebody say to me, if comfortable, versus the cold pricklies, which are real put-downs, and well, it's better than being ignored, but it doesn't feel very comfortable for fear that we'll ever run out of the warm fuzzies, and we won't. Attitudes are contagious. I often tell my classes that one piece of homework I want everyone to do is when they wake up in the morning and they go to wash their face or brush their teeth or comb their hair, to look in the mirror and go to themselves. Try it. You'll like it. Anyone been in another class where I suggested this and you've done it? And if it gives you a chuckle on your face for the morning, that's okay. It at least just helps you start out the day with a smile on your face. Do you realize it takes fewer muscles to smile than it does to frown. Something like 17 muscles are involved in smiling and 43 are involved in frowning. So smile. It takes less energy. You can smile 3 times for the price of 1 frown. Attitudes are contagious. And we don't have to be locked into healthy patterns. Part of our expectations is to look in our earlier tool building, to look at what are some of the things we've learned at our mother or father's knees and other places. The actions that we saw modeled that may or may not be helpful for you in your present situation. What do we change to be more acceptable, to be more helpful, to be more encouraging for us in each our own situations? That's not to say that what our parents taught us is all wrong. It just may not fit the next situation. And you may need to make some revisions, and that's okay. That's not putting your parents down. That's growing for meeting your own needs. We don't have to be locked into patterns that aren't helpful just because that's what we've experienced. I grew up in a family that's a very, very different situation from the family that I think we've raised our children in. Partly because I grew up on a farm, we raised our children in a near inner city area of Syracuse, New York. Whole lot of differences. I don't think I'm any less respectful of my parents because I've changed. I think they would have expected us to change to fit what our needs are going to be in the new situation. And we want to help all people that we're in relationship to grow into those. And while we're sharing, when we feel that there is something that's negative, to find the time to be able to say that rather than just stuff it, let it build into anger and explode and destroy the relationship perhaps, or at least chip away at it. But to be able to speak it in as it comes up, in little pieces, when it's still mild and small and little manageable. And a helpful way for that is also to go back to Tom Gordon and to use an I message, an I statement, describing the situation when I see, I feel, I hear, or when such and such happens. I feel because the effect on you. Rather than using the you messages that put the other person down. You always make me. You shouldn't have. You must. You ought to. And all these demands that we make on the other person. Rather than owning those feelings and those needs and the unacceptable feelings. And trying to work from that and to go from there perhaps to problem solving. And then to have this level of trust that we have in here too. That we trust each other to survive even the working through of problems, that we trust each other to stick with us, even if we have differences, that we trust each other to give support and encouragement to working on what needs to be worked on, to help each of us to be the best person that we can be. That we don't lose our individuality when we partner, or that when we come into a relationship, we don't pool become a melted pot, so to speak, a melting pot, but that we're still individuals who relate to each other, who can connect, who can enrich, who can enliven, who can support, who can encourage, and help each to be the most that each one has the potential for being. And that's some of the basics in building relationships. Let's have some questions. We have about 5 minutes of time for dealing with some issues or some concerns or some differences that you difference of opinion that you might have. Yes.
I think you're right on about housework being, you know, often a problem when both people are working.
Mm-hmm.
The thing that finally solved the whole thing for us was when I got a girl to come in and clean. And I'll tell you, that's the best investment of anybody's time in the world. I work maybe one half day a week to pay for my person to come in. And she went over a specific list of things that were chores for me. She cleans both bathrooms. She does the kitchen. She changes the beds, sticks the sheets in the washer and dryer, vacuums and dusts, and that's her responsibility. If I want her to do more than that, I leave her a note, and I pay her extra. But boy, did that ever solve it. And I thought, well, we can't afford that. I don't know why we thought that.
Yeah. Maybe you can't afford not to.
Right.
To have enough energy to keep that relationship going. That we may have to call in outside resources, and that's a job for another person. Let's hope she may have somebody clean her house.
My husband thinks it's marvelous.
Yeah, and
he takes a whole load of guilt off his shoulders.
Off both of your shoulders, I would imagine. Less guilt.
I noticed though she said I want to take half a day of my pay.
Yeah, I noticed that too.
Is that what you were going to respond to?
I was thinking, why not a half a day of his pay to do the lawn and the, you know, and the mechanical work, change the oil.
Or maybe it takes a quarter of day of his pay and a quarter of day of hers, and then they both put it together to cover this.
Well, it's just his and her pay. I thought it was our pay.
Well, it does go in a common checking account.
But you're feeling that's really part, that's an exchange for your work outside the home, which is a role we've put ourselves in. Mm-hmm. That house is my responsibility. I have a hard time saying we have people in and out of our house a lot since we're right across from the campus, that it needs to have a certain level of cleanliness, or I feel I'm being looked on, that I'm shirking my duty. And Paul will say, well, it's, you know, people don't think that anymore, and so forth and so forth. But I'm not so sure that if you walked in and there you'd see the dust where you could write your name and say, Catherine, you didn't do your, you know, it's not Paul, you didn't do your dusting.
Catherine, I was interested in your point about the shared decision making, I guess. Mm-hmm. And I have a little trouble thinking of a church or any organization that is run by a committee, even a committee of two. And how do you overcome that?
Well, that's the difference between an institution and a partnership, perhaps.
An equal partnership.
An equal partnership.
Can you have a boat that's run by an equal partnership?
By two different people on the outside?
Two captains, yeah.
Two captains? Well, if you each have X number of dollars in the boat and you each want to use it X number of hours of time, and you're going to have to... You alternate, and you come into an agreement and a sharing. You can't have a master-slave relationship. If you've got half of the money in here, I want to use it three-quarter of the time. You may have a little bit of difficulty getting away with it. So there's a difference between an institution and a relationship. We call it the institution of marriage, but that's not a good label for it. And there may be some truth in what you're talking about for the institution. Partnership is different.
Oh, I think probably you take turns being captain, though, and it's up to each relationship to decide strengths and weaknesses, and maybe who should be the captain of this area, and maybe the other person will be a captain of a different area.
But for partnerships to say, okay, I'll take care of all the big decisions and you take care of all the little decisions isn't exactly a partnership either.
No, I'm thinking in some families or relationships, one person is very good with the checkbook, and it isn't always the man, and it isn't always the woman.
And sometimes, even in that, it's helpful to switch every now and then just to develop further awareness in the person who may not like to do it, what you're going through, and also a greater recognition of resources and income and outgo, to tune them in a little bit closer, so that... I think if for the men who may say, I can handle this better, and the women saying, I don't want to handle it, and something occurs down the line, death or whatever, and the woman is absolutely, or the man, is absolutely bewildered, where is our money? In our household, I do manage the checkbook. Most of the time, and every now and then I do a kind of quiz to say, Paul, do you really know which bank we have our money in? Do you know, in case something happens to me, will you know where to go, what to do? Yeah.
I do believe, though, that there are men our age, either just before retirement or after retirement, that are it's just impossible for them to change from those old guard ideas. They just cannot accept the re-socialization of
ideas on equality. I mean, to them, what's theirs is theirs, and what is hers is theirs.
or it can be the other way around. I think there have been situations of that too. And it may be hard, and a word of warning might be, this needs to be worked out long before retirement. I mean, start, each day is a new day. So if there's been a lot of, you know, I'll take, you know, I'm responsible and you do what I say, you might decide, okay, let's see how we can do some problem solving, do some renegotiation, and build into a more equal kind of relationship. Because the time is going to come when retirement does come, what is the other person going to do around the house? It's my house. If you're the homemaker who's been home and you have everything in place that you want and you have your own order and your own system and your own schedule, to all of a sudden have an interloper come in and be there every day. As a friend of mine said long ago, I married for better or for worse, but not for lunch. And when her husband retired and was home for lunch, she said, I discovered lunch isn't so bad. She didn't like it for a while, though, but she decided maybe there was something new about it and adapted to it. And we may have to do some adaptation and some changing and deciding that there's some new possibilities in this world, and that may add excitement to the next life. I mean, the life after work, the life of retirement, to find some sharing. We saw a play a couple of weeks ago in a little straw hat theater in near Thousand Islands in Canada that was called The Tomorrow Box. But it was basically about he decided to sell the farm and wasn't going to tell his wife and was going to surprise her on her birthday that he had bought a house down in Florida and that's where they were going to move, and he was selling everything and they were going to buy new things down there. And she decided all these things were precious to her. She wanted a decision. And she recalled the last decision she made was when she said, I do, 50 years ago. She wasn't comfortable with that. So get used to making decisions and sharing equality. Thank you.